with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Okay, good evening, everyone, wherever you are in the world currently. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, say it with me now, finding one's courage to reclaim that who you have always been and who you are. Absolutely. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And you know, if you've been following me for some time, that each week these broadcasts are dedicated to integrating spirituality with our mental health. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you like more information about me, or if you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I just invite you to visit those websites. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all run together there. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And the second website is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So either one, you can leave me your comments, and I always enjoy reading them. And any suggestions that you have for, you know, future themes or subjects that you would like me to talk about or open it up to, you know, have people call in and so forth. And on that note, if you would like to call in and be part of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. So, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, have no fear, because this broadcast will be posted on the BBS Radio website so that you can go back and you can listen again, or you can go back into the archives for previous shows that you may have missed. And these podcasts are now also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Well, for those of you who just are happening to tune in for the very first time, I'd just like to say that, you know, welcome aboard. I always like to have new listeners, and just like to share a little bit about myself, just ever so brief, you know, for people who are tuning in for the first time. So I just want to say that I am, you know, a firm believer that all of us, I don't care who you are, but all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything that we need for in this life. In terms of our gifts or our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, personalities, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, as we go along in life and due to some unpleasant experiences, we may think that we need to hide our giftedness or hide our skills or our talents because maybe they've been exploited, or maybe it just we didn't feel safe doing that. Or, you know, we might have just pushed our giftedness way down so that somebody else cannot see it. Or maybe we were told again and again and again that we would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. Well, at any rate, you know, when we don't realize our giftedness, when we don't find those strengths and skills and talents and personality and so forth, we're going to go through life functioning from a place of woundedness instead of from a place of healing and wholeness. And my favorite Latin word, hacheitas. It's a uniqueness. It's a thisness. Or as I explained to the kids, it's like it's the thumbprint. You know, we all have it. We all have a uniqueness to us. But no two are alike. And that's where this uniqueness comes in. That's this hacheitas, which we all have. And yet there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Having the courage, finding the courage, walking in the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and that which you have always been. Well, Anthony DeMello, he was an Indian Jesuit priest. He was also a psychotherapist and a spiritual teacher, and he was renowned for blending Ignatian spirituality with Eastern contemplative traditions. And he writes about this very same thing. He writes about spirituality as a journey in a poem entitled A Journey Without Distance. And he says that the spiritual quest is a journey without distance. You travel from where you are right now to where you have always been. Okay? You travel from where you are right now to where you have always been. From ignorance to recognition. For all you do is see for the first time what you have always been looking at. And he writes kind of, you know, in an amusing way, whoever heard of a path that brings you back to yourself or with a method that makes you, you know, what you have always been? But it's true. And he says spirituality, after all, is only a matter of becoming who you really are. And that is so true. That is so true. I think that many times we often complicate things, but it's, you know, a journey that's not for the faint of heart, let's just say. You know, because once we are committed to a spiritual journey and committed to exactly who am I, we need to fasten the seatbelt and hang on, because it's kind of the rest of our life question and search. But it brings so much peace and joy and bliss in discovering who we are, and trusting because of who we are as a soul, we then can live it out in a world that could be sometimes hostile to it, right? Well, how is your heart today? I hope you are well, and I hope your heart is well. I hope that if you're struggling today in any sense of the word, you know, I hope that you find rest. I hope that you find the comfort you need and the peace that you need. Well, welcome to tonight's show, which focuses on whispering transformations. Can you hear me? Okay. Well, does anybody out there remember ever watching the movie The Horse Whisperer? Okay, The Horse Whisperer. It was a 1998 movie that starred Robert Redford and Kristen Scott Thomas and Sam Neill and a very young Scarlett Johansson. And the movie plot centered on a young girl and her horse struggling to recover from a horrific riding accident involving a semi-truck on a back road. Now, her mother, Annie, who was played by Kristen Scott Thomas, she was a high-powered New York Magazine editor, and she realizes that Grace will only recover once the horse is healed. And she gets this idea, she finds Robert Redford's character, this horse whisperer, and she takes them both to a secluded Montana ranch where this legendary horse whisperer, Tom Booker, or Robert Redford, begins to heal the horse. And interestingly enough, both Grace and her horse heal and recover from their traumatic wounds. And, you know, despite the intense dialogue sometimes, there's one scene that really caught my attention. You know, it's a scene where Tom Booker, the horse whisperer, and Grace take a break from a driver's lessons in an open field. You know the scene. Okay. And they talk, and, you know, Tom shares what he really thinks is going on with her horse, Pilgrim. And it's just interesting, woven all throughout this movie is Tom Booker's understanding of how to treat traumatized horses. That, first of all, they're not just animals to be trained or ridden, but they are actually awakened beings. They're very spiritual, with their own unique feelings and fears and needs, kind of like Pachaitas. Now, he works to restore the horse's trust and confidence by creating this safe, calm environment, and he uses just gentle, non-coercive methods to rebuild this bond between the horse and the rider. Or, in other words, Tom explains it as, well, I actually help horses with people problems. And his secret in treating Grace's horse is really not that complicated. And Tom's method is not about whispering in a literal sense, but it's more about listening. Truly listening to the horse's needs, the horse's heart, the horse's spirituality, and responding with compassion. It's a definite heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul connection that he makes with the horses that he works with. And it's in this method that we also understand this story's central theme, that healing, whether for a human or an animal, comes from understanding, compassionate communication, and mutual respect. Powerful. Not complicated, but still powerful. And you know, to be a truly good listener, we have to be comfortable with silence. You know, we have to quiet ourselves and listen to another person, as well as especially listening to God in silence and allowing the presence of that moment to speak for itself. Well, one of my favorite stories about Mother Teresa was about the time she was asked by a reporter, well, what do you say, you know, to God when you pray? And she replied, I don't say anything. Well, then, what does God say to you? Well, he doesn't say anything. He also listens. I mean, now that's entering silence on a soul level. And this is when we discover that human language may actually hinder listening to the soul's cry. You see, we can be in prayer, but if our minds are racing a mile a minute, then we're definitely not in silence. I mean, I've been there many, many times, especially when I think, okay, I'm now ready to pray and just sit quietly, and then all of a sudden the monkey mind starts in, you know, and it's like, okay, I got to take care of this first, and then I could, you know, sit in peace and really listen. And, you know, there was a time way back when I really threw myself into prayer. You know, I prayed all the time. I loved it. I prayed morning, noon, and night. But it seemed as though the more I talked, the less I heard from God. Until one day, I was sitting around, you know, with a group of friends talking about spirituality. And when the subject turned to prayer, a subject that I bragged about, that I knew a lot about. Well, about halfway through my pontification, a friend from Africa motioned for me to stop. He just raised his hand and he just said, well, wait, 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 wait. You know, for all of your praying, you know nothing about prayer. And you know what? I became offended. What are you talking about? That was until he spoke his next sentence. He said, this is the problem with your prayers and why you do not hear from God. You do all the talking. You never listen. You never listen to God. And in that moment, I knew he was right. I didn't like it, but I knew he was right. I did all the talking. I never gave God a chance to respond or act in line with what I wanted God to be for me, that God's never going to do that. But as a result, that aha moment really put me on a trajectory toward contemplative prayer. You know, contemplative prayer, there we go. It's actually a discipline of intentionally entering a quiet, reflective state to draw closer to God, to listen, as well as, you know, not listening with my ears, but I listen with my heart. To be fully present with God, fostering just a deeper spiritual connection within myself and really fostering this connection that I have with all people and all things. So why are we so uncomfortable with silence? You know, depending on the kind of day, you know, people have, you know, many people can't wait to get home, decompress, relax, enjoy some peace and quiet. Yeah, we've all been there. But craving some peace and quiet is not the same thing as being in silence. How so? Well, first of all, you would think that quiet and silence are the same things. Not quite. Because when we think about quiet, we may tend to think of it as the absence of sound. or at least as stifling the noise around us. I mean, we even have noise-canceling earphones these days, and earbuds, and soundproof rooms, and so on and so forth. And yes, these are very helpful in eliminating background sound, which allows us to work from home or beyond conference calls without all the distractions, or even to simply listen to music more fully without interference. Now, silence, on the other hand, that's different. In the spiritual meditative sense, silence is intentionally entering into a state of inner peace and tranquility. Okay, so it's more than just quieting our minds by dismissing all the checklists of things that we have to do. But we enter into silence. It's really more intentional because we seek to communicate with God on that soul level, a dimension where words are not necessary. In fact, words can't even follow. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that quiet and silence are often interchangeable in the minds of many. I do it all the time. And I did a little checking earlier this week because I've often heard it said that there is no sound in silence. You know, that maybe because I'm nostalgic and I remember Simon and Garfunkel's song, "The Sound of Silence." But does silence have sound? Well, it all depends on whom you ask. You know, there are many interpretations out there of sound and silence. And according to Dr. Seth Horowitz of Brown University, he writes that in truly quiet areas, as he writes in his book, The Universal Sense, he says, in truly quiet areas, you can even hear the sound of air molecules vibrating inside your ear canals or the fluid in your ears themselves. Well, others may interpret silence as a moment when something is left unsaid, because, as I said, words themselves are unnecessary. You know, it could cause a gap in the conversation when silence itself replaces words. You know, like say you're in a group of people and everything, and everybody's talking, or you're at a party and everybody's talking, and every 7 minutes, there's a pause. There's like just a brief moment of silence, and then you start up again. That just seems to be the way conversations go. Like there has to be a pause or a gap where silence is there. And you know, silence can also be an indication of empathy. You know, when we're really tuning in to how another person is feeling and then about what they're saying, we're listening more to the tone of their voice and speed rather than the actual words, as in there is an awareness of pain or suffering in others that's so deep, words cannot express it adequately. And we enter into that empathy, that advanced empathy, to really join another person in their pain or suffering or whatever else is troubling them. So, you know, in one sense, you can say that silence has sound, but more accurately, silence has vibration. It's a vibration that can not only be heard by our ears and interpreted in our minds, but it's also felt deep within. And it's this characteristic of silence that requires no words. But you know, just as we have the capacity for language, okay, we also have the same capacity for vibration. And this is why we need to realize that when we choose the words we say, they carry not only the sound of energy, but they also carry vibration. And with our words and our energy, we have the power to heal. Or we also have the power to wound. Well, another favorite movie of mine, apart from The Horse Whisperer, is that if you've ever seen the movie Mr. Holland's Opus, that is just a classic summer movie. You know, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, you know, get it and or you know, stream it somehow. Mr. Holland's Opus, and you know, Richard Dreyfuss is a music teacher. Okay, and you know, just going back to the story, you might recall that his character, Mr. Holland, was this music teacher, a lover of music, but he had a son who was born without the sense of hearing. And he just thought that God played a cruel joke on him. Here I am. My whole world is listening to music, and my son can't hear anything. But, you know, as his son grew up, his son fell in love with working on older cars. And he found this mechanic's stethoscope to really listen to the engine's vibration. And he would be able to tell whether the engine was running smoothly or if something in it was misfiring. And an underlying, very subtle message in that movie was that human beings can be attuned to increasingly high vibrations that connect us with higher parts of ourselves. Okay. And this realization even helped Mr. Holland, you know, as when he put on a high school concert in which the sounds of his orchestra were hooked up to all kinds of bright lights so that every note, every drum beat, and even the clash of the cymbals resonated with exploding flashes of colorful light. I mean, it was really, truly astonishing to watch. In fact, I've watched that scene over and over again, and I've turned off the sound just to try to understand what that would be like if I didn't have music, but I could feel and see the vibration. Well, yeah, we can feel sound. We can feel silence. Because after a sound is produced, the vibration continues. We can even listen to our own heartbeats through a stethoscope. But more importantly, we feel the vibration of our hearts. And in a practical sense, when we experience forgiveness and we can release that negative energy and pain that we've been hanging on to, those aspects of ourselves that really no longer serve us, you know, we tune into higher frequencies or vibrations, as it were. We begin to experience things in ways in which we never have. And that's then this truth about us as a soul becomes a little bit more clear. Or, you know, think of it this way, as a, you know, if you've ever seen a music tuner using a tuning fork, you know, like say he's like tuning a piano, okay? And he has this tuning fork, you know, and he tunes the fork by first striking the prongs, thereby releasing a perfect wave pattern. And then he adjusts the sound of the instrument, or in this case, the piano, so that the two vibrations are in sync. Kind of sounds a lot like, you know, are we in tune with the higher vibrations, the energy of God? You know, it's not God who has to be adjusted. We do. We do. The two vibrations need to be in sync. And therefore, what do we need to, let's say, retune in our lives to match with the higher vibration and the energy of God? But, you know, even scripture reminds us of the importance of entering silence through prayer and meditation so that we can benefit from that attunement. And vibration takes us into another level of awareness. In fact, this is what the gurus and the swamis and the yogis teach, that in order to find God, you must first know how to enter into silence, for that is where God is. Well, many ancient and contemporary practitioners of meditation, you know, they use chanting sounds, you know, chanting sacred sounds, to help them align with higher vibrations, such as the sacred sounds of Om, or, as I've always been taught, Om. And back in the 90s, I remember, you know, science was tripping over themselves, you know, just trying to discover that when people chant Om, a vibration of sound is felt through our vocal cords, clearing and opening the sinuses. And then they also discovered that chanting Om also has cardiovascular benefits. It reduces stress and relaxes our bodies. It lowers our blood pressure to a normal level, and it really helps, you know, our heartbeat maintain a regular rhythm. But the vibration of sounding Om goes far beyond merely a physiological result, you know, because the more attuned we are to the presence of God, the more we experience this empathetic resonance. That is our soul coming into resonance with the soul of God. And what we discover in being more fully connected to the soul of God then is that we are connected to things that bring us great joy, as well as being connected to things that are disturbing and cause us great suffering. But that does not stop us. That does not stop us, because we can transform great suffering into great joy. We can, just transmute what we think is our separateness from God into a realization that before we were born, God knew us as a soul. God knew us as a soul. So what's keeping us from seeing ourselves as a soul and seeing others as a soul? But still, we embrace all as an extension of God's presence and grace and healing for those who are looking and listening. In other words, we embrace all things to create a space for transformation in all people. And that's very profound right there. What space are we creating for transformation to occur? What kind of presence do we bring to each and every relationship or groups or whoever? What is that like? Can people see that? Yes. Can people hear it? Yes. But it's more importantly that our presence can be felt by others, and that they get in touch with being reminded of who they are as a soul and their own unique Chaitas presence. And as transforming people, we just simply cannot pick and choose when and where and why and how God will use us. Instead, since we expect that God is more than able to understand and embrace all aspects of our lives, well, should we not also be willing to be the same for ourselves and others? For example, okay, if we want to be used of God used by God as healers, okay, it should not come as a surprise that we are going to be placed in circumstances where there is pain and sorrow and suffering. And if we want God to grant us ancient wisdom, it should come as no surprise that we are going to be placed in situations where people may be impulsive and lack insight, who really need wisdom. And if we want God to use us as peacemakers, it's going to be no surprise that we're going to be placed in times of war and chaos and death. In fact, even to work for peace, we might have to expose ourselves to non-peaceful situations. But, the same is true, that if we want to be more and more authentic, we sometimes are going to find ourselves exposed to very inauthentic people and inauthentic situations. The question for us then is, when we listen for God, what do we hear? And moreover, contemplation helps us reclaim our authentic selves as the silence awakens the deepest desires of our souls. And really, before I fully understood the value of contemplation, I viewed silence as not only the absence of noise, but also the absence of God. To be quite honest, I knew that silence was there, but I did not know how to enter it or even how to listen for God in it. And, my mind and my ego, especially my ego, just couldn't comprehend how God communicates when I hear nothing. In fact, in some ways, I was kind of like David in Psalm 130. Out of the depths, I cry to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. And so on and so forth. Okay. And, although most people are uncomfortable with silence, or they might even convince themselves that God's uninterested in their circumstances, silence is actually where we connect with God's living presence. For we do not enter into silence just for the sake of ridding ourselves of whatever sounds of the day we want to escape. I mean, many people would see this as a welcome relief, me included. But on the contrary, we welcome purposefully entering into silence with God to experience this empathetic resonance more clearly. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart on this subject of whispering transformations. So if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And as I said, I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back, everybody, from that short break. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about this movie, The Horse Whisperer, you know, and just how the main character, Tom Booker, the Horse Whisperer, played by, I just blanked on his name. Can you believe that? Robert Redford. Okay, here we go. And Tom Booker, played by Robert Redford, was the horse whisperer. And he used his understanding of how to treat traumatized horses, not just as animals to be trained or ridden, but he truly believed that they are awakened beings, spiritual beings with their own unique feelings and fears and needs, kind of like I was talking earlier about Hachetos. And he really works to restore the horse, Pilgrim. He works to restore Pilgrim's trust and confidence by creating a safe, calm environment using this gentle, non-coercive method to rebuild the bond between a horse and a rider. And he did this just very discreetly. It was all done in silence. And this is where the whispering comes in, but he wasn't exactly whispering. He was listening. And you know, his secret in treating Grace's horse is not complicated. You know, like I said, Tom's method was not about whispering in a literal sense, but it's more about listening, truly listening to the horse's needs and responding with compassion. And in my book, it's a definite heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul connection that he makes with the horses that he works with. And granted, you know, it's a movie, okay? But there are people out there who consider themselves to be horse whisperers, that they have such a strong spiritual connection with animals that they can connect with them on a deeper level, especially, you know, not even using words, but just by their presence. And, you know, it is this method that came through, you know, the movie, The Horse Whisperer, that we understand the story's central theme. That, you know, healing, okay, whether it's for an animal or a human being, comes from understanding, gentle communication, and mutual respect. It's kind of ironic. We crave quiet, but we can be uncomfortable with silence. I mean, the movie is powerful, you know, but it's really not complicated, just listening. It's still powerful. And to be truly a good listener, we have to be comfortable with silence. I mean, we have to quiet ourselves and listen to others, especially God, in silence, and allow the presence of the moment to speak for itself. And this was something I learned when I was a hospital chaplain many, 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 many decades ago. Okay. And I didn't even know what it was. I didn't even know the value of presence. It's just that, you know, I would be paged, okay, a family needs a chaplain, go. And so I would go introduce myself and, just sit with them. And maybe they have lost a loved one, or maybe their loved one's in surgery, or whatever the crisis moment was. And I barely said a couple of words, but I sat with them. And then, when it was time for me to go, I asked if they wanted to pray, and we prayed and so forth. And, I started to take notice that the people I sat with started to feel better. They had like this peace of, they still didn't know what was going to happen to their loved ones, but they had this peace about them and they were calmer. And I remember about halfway through the chaplaincy program that, I had the beeper and I slid it across the table, with the head chaplain. And I go, you know what? I don't even know if I'm doing any good. I just sit with people and well, we pray at the end and so forth, but how do I know if I'm doing any good here? I don't get it, but they seem to respond to that. And the chaplain, he slid the beeper back to me and he goes, why don't you hang on to that? Because you're going to be called many, many more times because you are starting to realize the power of presence. Oh, is that what you call it? Presence. And I really started to see that there's power in our presence. There's healing power, there's grace, there's not just sitting in silence, but it's sitting with silence, using that silence to really fully understand and to just witness and be in that same presence with others who are suffering. See, we must not only be comfortable with silence, but we also have to be comfortable in silence. Silence does carry sound. And with that sound, of course, as I said in the first half of the show, there is vibration. And there's more to silence than just waiting to talk. But it's interesting in counseling therapy that whenever a client is silent, we were always taught that, well, you need to understand that as, the client is displaying some form of inner resistance, of not wanting to talk as an act of defiance. But that's not always the case. In fact, I did just the opposite, that whenever a client is silent, I enter into silence with that client. Because they're going inward. It's not resistance. It's a contemplation. It's a struggling in the moment, and I enter into that struggle with them. And after a while, I may or may not break the silence, but if I do, I would say something like, "So what's coming up in you right now? What are you thinking about? What's being laid on your heart?" And sure enough, in that time of silence, they went deep. They really went deep into looking at their problems or situations or pain or misery or grief. Okay? Because if there's one lesson that I've learned over the years, it's that suffering and silence often go hand in hand. And this is also another way to understand the vibration of silence. That, when a person or people are forced into silence and believe that they have no voice. And yet, how do we reach beyond these stories into the silences that they hide? Well, listen for what's not being said, or even more importantly, what cannot be said. We can hold a space for another stories to emerge, but we have to be comfortable in silence. Now, to further grasp this truth, let's contemplate the silence of water. Okay? Yeah, you heard right. Silence of water. If you ever have noticed, water is the epitome of silence. Water only makes sounds when it's moving against another surface, such as being poured into a glass or when swallowing it, or when water runs over rocks or crashing against the shore, when the winds create its waves. And yet, when it's still, this inaudible silence of water communicates how it is filled with life that gives life to all who depend on it. Now, another great summer movie, you want to watch it, is, you know, a movie that communicates this very truth about water. And it's the 2013 film, The Cherokee Word for Water, which follows the work that led Wilma Mankiller to become the first contemporary female chief of the Cherokee Nation. It highly recommended. Highly recommend. Great, great storyline. And in this movie, the analogy of listening is woven throughout, encouraging people to listen to the water, listen with your hearts, listen to what another person really needs. Here's a great exercise, okay? The next time you drink water, meditate on the characteristics of light and the sound that it makes. I mean, just really just sit in silence and contemplate how this molecular structure of water, H2O, okay, gives life to our human breath, O2 and CO2, oxygen and carbon dioxide. Now consider how God has breathed life into us, okay, and where we feel the breath, matter, and movement of God in our lives. And this is something about words and speaking and breath, is that it's all external. It all goes away from us. We cannot form words if we're breathing in. You know, it's only when we breathe out that we have the sound with the words and the vibration. And really, let's take this understanding one step further. Okay, why not? You know, as we swallow water, you know, enter into the silence of gratitude for its life-giving properties. I mean, how often do we just like chug water and then, okay, next? You know, but do we ever stop and just express a prayer of gratitude for how water gives us life, how water actually sustains, you know, just the light within? They deeply connect on how the essence of water helps us discover our inner voice so that we can be a voice for those who have no water, let alone for those who are unable to speak. Do you know, this was actually a phenomena. I read a book one time by Urvashi Bhutalia, and it's something that she understood all too well, you know, because she writes this book, The Other Side of Silence. Powerful writing. And she wrote about how 50 years later, the people of India and Pakistan still grieved the partition of 1947. She also noticed that when she interviewed people about how life changed for them, the men and the women actually told their stories differently, and that the women had more periods of silence in their stories. But, you know, for example, let's say if the husbands or the sons were present, she said that they would actually take over the interview, you know, causing women to lapse into a sort of silence. And she noted that this was not uncommon because many oral histories have been written about the difficulty of speaking to and with women, or of learning to listen differently, often listening for little hidden nuances, or as she puts it, the half said thing. And she was just amazed because she said, all in all, it was this silence that was sometimes more eloquent than speech. And one of the aspects I'm discovering is that attuning to higher dimensions of spirituality and who we are, we indeed hear God and the universe more clearly. Yet, however, living daily in higher dimensions, you know, certainly will awaken us to higher levels of silence. You know, because ultimately, as we become aware, we also accept and we allow ourselves to be carried by God's grace. Okay. Well, I'm sure that you all have heard the poem or you read the poem, Footprints in the Sand. Okay. It's a poem based on Christian beliefs that describes a person having a dream one night when they're just walking on the beach with God. Okay. And as they walk along, analogous to a person's various life experiences, they leave two sets of footprints in the sand. But suddenly, the two sets of footprints become one, especially at the lowest and most hopeless moments of the dreamer's life. Now, the dreamer couldn't take it. They questioned God, and, you know, believing that the Lord must have abandoned his love during those times. God says, no, but let me explain. It was during your times of trial and times of suffering that when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. You know, perhaps if we can enter into a higher dimension of silence, we just might also awaken to the lesson that silence does not automatically mean the absence of God, but rather, maybe silence is calling us to resonate with the calling to become an answer to prayer for others. Have you ever considered yourself to be an answer to somebody's prayer? Yeah, I think we have many opportunities each and every day. You just never know. And as we go through life, and, you know, and depending on our experiences, you know, we really start questioning what used to be true for us. Okay, you know, for example, ever since childhood, we've had a certain way of seeing ourselves or interacting with others or how we see God or even, you know, how do we view this world at large? And when we have gone through an experience that really shakes us up or even shatters our innocence, our assumptions, you know, we feel as though nothing makes sense anymore. We don't seem to have a sense of our bearings, let alone, you know, which way is up. And this could be very unnerving. You know, it's just an unnerving state or a place that we find ourselves in, especially if we feel like everything that we have known is starting to crumble and evaporate. And we can become so unsure, not only of ourselves, but also, you know, whether all that we see is all that there is. You know? And yet, we can weather these storms. We may also discover that something greater than ourselves is tugging at our souls. I mean, call it a stronger nudge from God, a more intense dimensional energy, or even a hunger that resonates deep, deep, deep within by compelling us to go and search to discover the vastness of who we truly are. And as we go on this journey, we're going to discover that there are things that we, you know, need to identify and let go of and transform in order to embrace, you know, higher, more intense dimensions. So in other words, rising above those negative mental, emotional, physical, even spiritual triggers that keep us from experiencing the fullness of unconditional love. And this phenomenon is at the heart of a, let's say, a multidimensional understanding of spirituality. Well, one more story. You know, in the Oglala Lakota tradition, there was a gentleman who lived from 1890 to 1989. His name was Frank Foolscrow. And he taught that in order to become holy, that is, one through whom the Great Spirit could work in and through to heal others, a person must first become like a hollow bone. Now, Frank Foolscrow believed that people are not to seek transformation for their own power and honor, but rather they seek transformation so that they can serve the community. Or rather, being a hollow bone, they can be this pipeline connecting God and the people. And this process of becoming a hollow bone began when people asked God to rid themselves of anything that might impede them, such as doubts, or questions, or selfishness, or reluctance, just to name a few. And as a result, you know, psycho-spiritually transformed people would then need to see themselves as unobstructed conduits, for lack of a better, you know, phrase here, through whom God could work to bless others. Yeah, asking to be a hollow bone, it's a selfless task that you're taking on. And the ego will put up a fight, because the ego does not like to lose. However, if you have such a burden on your heart for others, and to serve others without the need for recognition, that you're just one that does it so that the people can live. Okay, you're on the path of becoming a hollow bone. And you know, the hollow bone is a powerful symbol for emptying ourselves of everything that hinders and impedes the life of God's Spirit. Okay? And you know, let's go back to our early days in biology class, you know, where we learned that bones provide our bodies not only with the physical frame, but our bones also contain marrow, or this flexible tissue that's responsible for producing blood and supporting the immune system. Okay? However, in understanding this concept of becoming a hollow bone, we must first acknowledge our need to, metaphorically speaking, die to ourselves. Because ironically, a hollow bone is both dead, in that it doesn't contain any blood or marrow, and yet at the same time, the hollow bone is alive, because it is the Spirit of God flowing freely in and through us for the benefit of others. I'll say that again, because that's you know, something that we really need to take in. A hollow bone is both dead in that it doesn't contain any blood or marrow, and yet at the same time, the hollow bone is alive, because it is the Spirit of God flowing freely in and through us for the benefit of others. And this is not a one-time event, you know, but rather it's an ongoing process of examining and letting go of ourselves, letting go of that ego, transforming that ego in order to take hold of something better for the sake of humanity. You know, God's speaking all the time. What keeps us from hearing his voice? Do we do all the talking? Well, maybe we do. And how hard is it, how difficult is it for us to enter into silence, to really sit and just listen with no expectations? You know, and through contemplation, we not only need to stop our mind's chatter, which can go a mile a minute, trust me, but also to open our hearts to, you know, to how we see and listen for God, especially in silence. So where do you see God in all things? In the beauty of a sunset? Beauty of a sunrise? Do we focus on hearing God's voice in the cries and laughters of others? How do we feel God in the wind and the rain? Do we hear God in the sound of the owls and the eagles and the hawks? And similarly, should we not also look for God in the tears of a child, or listen for the voice of God in every heartbreak, or find the voice of God giving us a voice to express our pain? I'm Dr. James Houck. And I just want to say, you know, from my heart, thank you for spending this evening with me. And until the next time that we get together, may everybody be safe, may everybody behave themselves, and may everyone be held in the palm of God's hands. God bless you, and good night.
For an answer, or just to leave a thousand comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.